The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live on Tuesday from Studio West. The major story is the death toll in Turkey and Syria has shot past 5,000 people known dead. Tens of thousands of people are still trapped. The efforts are a mad dash in both northern Syria and southern Turkey to get the sort of professionals there. They're deploying from Israel, from the United States, who are skilled at removing people from the rubble. This is a first ever earthquake for me where victims of the earthquake trapped underground in rubble are using their cell phones and their batteries and conserving it to try and direct searchers to them. The death toll could rise to more than 20,000 people, according to the World Health Organization. And thousands of rescue teams are arriving in Turkey, according to the Wall Street Journal this morning. But the New York Times notes time is running out to find survivors. This story published this morning at 4 a.m. A woman was rescued from the rubble of a collapsed building 22 hours after an earthquake leveled parts of Turkey and Syria. The Turkish state news media service Anadolu Agency reported this morning. More than 16,000 rescuers were engaged in the search for survivors, the agency said, citing an emergency management official. The one window for finding others was beginning to narrow, experts said. Specialists flying to Turkey from the U.S. and beyond were certain to find challenges gaining access to the sites and executing rescue operations. From 1 to 3 days after an earthquake is usually the, quote, golden period, close quote, for saving lives, said Lodi Karua, a search and rescue expert in Indonesia, where she has volunteered for earthquake response for many, many years. The people we're rescuing are injured. They're under the rubble. We don't know how deep under they are. They're stuck. Maybe some have crushed legs, broken bones, and they can't cry out for help. And so pray for all those people, because there are lots and lots and lots of people in Turkey who are under tons of rubble. Now, my phone number is 1-800-520-1234. We are today focusing on the State of the Union and what you expect to hear as well. Going into that, I don't know that the president will be addressing the big red bubble ball, the Chinese spy balloon. Yesterday, Department of Defense officials said they had failed to detect suspected Chinese surveillance balloons in the past. After that, that did not hang together for very long, saying, oh, this happened under the Trump years. The DOD is now caught in whatever their previous statement was, and their previous statement was, this happened before, and now they're being asked, huh? No one heard about it. Trump didn't hear about it. Pompeo didn't hear about it. O'Brien didn't hear about it. Bolton didn't hear about it. Who the heck did you tell? And so now we're going to get a different story, and there will be hearings, and we will finally find out what's going. But that's their story, and they're sticking with it. Previous Chinese balloon incursions initially went undetected. So it just so happens there were previous Chinese spy packages that the Pentagon knows about that they're telling us about now that they didn't tell the president about when he was the president. It's not a good look for the Pentagon. Something is amiss at the Pentagon. Lawmakers gear up to grill Biden officials over the Chinese spy balloon. Well, that's a given. Of course they're going to do that. They're going to do that quite a lot. Speaker McCarthy gave a pre-State of the Union address. Let's grab a couple of clips from that. My phone number is 1-800-520-1234. Do you have any expectations for the State of the Union tonight? I'm not sure I'm going to watch it. I think I'll listen to it and get some exercise in, so it will be worthwhile, but it might be too painful to actually watch. Here's Speaker McCarthy yesterday making sure that the president does not— he's preempting a lie the president has been telling for the last week. And so McCarthy is on tape before the State of the Union, cut number 15.
Cuts to Medicare and Social Security, they are off the table. Defaulting on our debt is not an option. But neither is a future of higher taxes, higher interest rates, and an economy that doesn't work for working Americans.
Continued cut number 16, Speaker McCarthy.
Thanks to 4 years of runaway spending by the Democrats, they increased annual discretionary spending by $400 billion. That's a 30% increase in just 4 years. They took our nation's credit card, spent like crazy, and left us in deep debt. But not once did they seek or accept any responsibility. Instead, they doubled down. In 2021, Democrats passed the largest debt limit increase in American history. Then they maxed our nation's credit cards again just 13 months later. Now, President Biden wants Congress to raise the debt limit yet again, without a single sensible change to how government spends your hard-earned money. None.
So you've got to ask yourself, that's excellent framing by the Speaker. He'll have the gavel behind President Biden tonight, next to Vice President Harris. But the reality of this is that don't expect much tonight. Just don't. It's going to be a boring old guy giving an old speech, not making much coherent content. But at least what Leader McCarthy is doing is preparing the audience to hear him say the Republicans are going to threaten Medicare and Social Security and we won't let them, and to get an applause line from the Democrats, and the Republicans are not threatening Medicare and Social Security. And I don't think you can count on legacy media telling you the truth at that moment. We will see. We will see. Now, let's go back to the Chinese spy balloon. Yesterday, Secretary Pompeo was on this show. He later went on with Martha McCallum over at Fox and elaborated even more. Cut number 12.
It's confounding to me, Martha. I can speak for myself. I certainly never became aware that there was a three-bus-size floating device coming across our country for 5 days, either CI director or secretary of state. I've talked to others who are on my teams. They don't know anything about it either. I'm anxious to hear how this ends, but we've seen Ambassador Bolton, Ambassador O'Brien, two secretaries of defense, all say they didn't know about it. So I'm completely confounded about what they're speaking about. And frankly, it looks like an effort to deflect from what was a disastrous handful of days.
One more cut. Cut 13 from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo talking to Martha McCallum on Fox.
Martha, it seems unimaginable to me that someone on my team working over at the Pentagon, at CIA and State, we have liaison officers, someone in the political chain of command over at the Department of Defense, it seems unimaginable that somehow this wouldn't have gotten to the political leadership in the White House or State Department or at the CIA. I can't figure out how that happened. If it did, someone needs to explain it to me and to the American public as well.
Cut number 2, Joe Biden on the White House lawn yesterday talking about the Chinese balloon.
We've made it clear to China what we're going to do. They understand our position. We're not going to back off. We did the right thing.
Has it always been your view to shoot down a Chinese spy balloon, or was it only because it became public?
Oh, no. It was always my position. Once it came over to into the United States from Canada, I told the Defense Department wanted to shoot it down as soon as it was appropriate. They concluded we should not shoot it down over land. It was not a serious threat, and we should wait till it got across the water.
If anyone believes that, by the way, that he had decided to shoot it down, don't buy any bridges. We obviously knew it was in Alaska and over the tundra of Canada, and there were many places. As Ryan Zinke said yesterday, Petroleum County, Montana has less people in it than does the United States Congress. It could have been managed. It wasn't. The president added this about TikTok, cut number 3.
TikTok, yeah.
Well, that's I'm not sure. I know I don't have enough money.
So he gets asked, what do you think about banning TikTok? And he says, to be honest, I'm not sure. I don't have it on my phone. He's so clueless. Cut number 4.
Why? The Chinese would commit such a brazen act floating across the entire continent of the United States.
Because the Chinese
government.
He doesn't really understand the question. We have time to replay that. I hope you can see his sort of vacant expression on the Salem News Channel. Cut number 4 being asked, why would the Chinese do this?
Why the Chinese would commit such a brazen act floating across the entire continent of the United States?
the Chinese.
It's scary. He doesn't have any idea how to answer this. He said, why the Chinese? And he walks away. Our president is infirm. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Bethany Mandel writes a syndicated column, which often appears first in the Deseret News. You see her on Twitter all the time. She joins me. Good morning, Bethany. How are you?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. I was going to talk to you about the organization column because it was fun and lighthearted. But during the break, I went and looked at the latest stuff out of Turkey. And the death toll is way past 5,000. 6,000 buildings collapsed. Now, in the United States, I'm getting to a point here. We lost one condo in Florida and it transfixed to the United States for months, as it should. It was tragic. I think we have a problem of scale in America. That's what I'm getting to, which is we have no idea the scale of this disaster. You think I'm accurate on that?
So I think so. I mean, as far as the death toll.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
6,000 buildings. I don't even know how you process that. What do you do first?
Yeah, I don't know how many people are inside. I know. I mean, I was actually looking at all of that news at 3 o'clock in the morning, doom scrolling on my phone. It's horrifying. The IDF have sent in rescue operations, and there's a lot of sort of work that has to be done. And what's scary is, you know, you don't know how many people are left alive under the rubble. If you multiply, I don't know, 10 people per building, that's a terrifying number of people who are waiting for rescue that might never come.
And a first-of-its-kind situation, many of the trapped victims have cell phones. I don't mean a couple. I mean many of them have cell phones.
Yeah.
And they're pinging people to try and get help, which would create moral dilemma after moral dilemma. We often make up the boy in the well moral dilemma stories at Harvard Business School, et cetera. This is a genuine moral dilemma. Where do you go first? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us have our cell phones in our pockets all the time. I have mine right here. But, you know, it's the women and the children first, right? That's
right.
What it should be. That's, you know, in a just society, it's women and children first. The scale that this is, I don't know how you sort of put everyone into an Excel spreadsheet and say, this is where you go. I think that it's just sort of a triage situation in which you decide, like, this is an area where there's 15 buildings that are down. And if we go from one to another, you know, we'll have a better chance of rescuing a bigger volume of people than, you know, going one and then two that are sort of more distantly located. But
so, Bethany, let me go back to something you said, because you set up my question perfectly. Women and children first has been a rule of organized society as long as there's been organized society. Am I right about that, do you think?
I mean, I think so. I mean, we've seen people sort of, there was a moral code that if you didn't rescue women and children first, then you've done something deeply morally wrong. So even though people haven't necessarily followed it, yes, it has been a moral sort of standard.
Now, will the I hate J.K. Rowling people hate the idea of women and children first? You know where I'm going with this,
yeah,
which is
absolutely.
It's all biological. Yeah. It's all driven, but that women and children first thing is all driven by biology. But biology is under attack, and J.K. Rowling is the number one martyr for the cause of biology, though it was hard to believe that would ever be a cause. It is one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you rescue women and children first if women if we can't define what a woman is, and children are now small humans that can go to drag shows.
Yes.
There's no such thing as a woman. There's no such thing as a child. They've completely stripped away the definition of both.
And so as people watch these rescue efforts and help them, keep in mind, we're doing this out of a universal moral imperative. The left, Bethany, biggest point of all, they can't get to a universal moral imperative. If they do, everything they're working for falls apart.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's sort of funny with sort of chivalry when you think about feminism now. Women are offended that men might look at them in the gym and offended that men might hold open the door, but they also don't want to be drafted. And you kind of have to pick one. If you don't want to be drafted, then you have to let the man open the door for you.
Yes.
And ask you out at the gym sometimes. Yeah. This is, you know, this biology.
It's not a retrogression to the 1850s separate but equal. It's not taking away the women's right to vote. It's a recognition of biology. Now, sometimes we over-recognize biology. And I've been teaching the Equal Protection Clause for the last few weeks. And I've got no problem with the decision in the United States versus Virginia Military Academy or the other one, Virginia Military Institute, sorry, VMIers. No problem. I don't want to rewrite the law. But I do think we are into the weird land now on gender. I mean, we're completely divorced from normal. And when you see a disaster like Turkey, all of a sudden the ordinary moral set kicks back in and no one even thinks twice about it.
Yeah, I mean, I am a woman and I would like to be rescued first. I have no problem saying that. If you're going to choose between me and like the guy down the street, I hope you're going to go for me. But this idea of, you know, biology going out the window, it's funny because it's the same folks who have the sign on their front lawn in this house, I believe in science. And then there should be an asterisk, except for anatomy.
Except for biology.
Except for, you know, genetics, whatever. I mean, there's a long list of things there's a caveat to.
Well, Bethany, I went in the wrong complete direction from what I told you I was doing, but that's radio. You look great this morning. Thank you for joining me. Bethany Shondark on Twitter, or just type in Bethany Mandel. Someday she'll change her Twitter handle and update, but not anytime soon. I doubt it. Don't go anywhere, America. Hour number three. I'm going to come back with MZ Hemingway. Molly Hemingway is next, America. Stay tuned. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside of Studio West. The noise you might hear in the background is I had the unfortunate choice of printing off 60 copies of my Washington Post column today on the need for a new Supreme Court revolution. They got to go faster, faster, faster. And I gave it to the students today, that's the sound you hear in the background. My guest is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist and Fox News. Good morning, Molly. How are you?
Great to be here with you. I'm great.
I was talking with Bethany Mandel just before you came on about the disaster in Turkey, which is actually beyond our ability to process at this point. 6,000 structures destroyed, and that's just in Turkey. We don't know about Syria. And I think back to the Florida condo disaster of last year and how much that transfixes. I really wouldn't know where to begin if I was a newsman in Turkey. But we did come to the original principle, and I want to know if you agree with it. If you have perfect information, you still rescue the children and the women first, right?
I am of that mindset, sure.
And so do you think that everybody recognizes that the actions of the rescuers run completely contrary to modern gender ideology?
Well, you and Bethany and I might think that, but I'm not sure if gender ideology hasn't affected so many people that we might be the outliers here, for all I know.
But it's so instantaneous, the reaction. Of course, you go, because everyone's got cell phones. The most horrific part of this story, I don't know if you've been watching it, are the children with cell phones who are trapped under the rubble with batteries that are expiring, asking, trying to get GPS location on them.
It's just awful. But there are these deeper truths that seem, that many people share, that a lot of modern leftists are trying to train people away from, and relationship between the sexes or treatment of children or treatment of the elderly are some of these things. But when things are really horrific and awful, I do think,
natural law returns. And that leads me by diverse path to what I was going to talk with Bethany. I'm going to talk to you last night at dinner. Fetching Mrs. Hewitt's best friend is with us for dinner. And talk turned to fashion sense. And of course, on the Drucker Hewitt spectrum of fashion sense. I am the least fashionable person you've ever met. I have a blue blazer, a blue button-down shirt, and gray pants, and that's the uniform, and I wear it. David Drucker, by contrast, is a clothes horse. Where does Mark Hemingway fall on the Drucker Hewitt spectrum of fashion sense?
No one has ever accused Mark Hemingway of being particularly fashionable, although I find him very, I find him very handsome.
The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt says the same thing. You just keep wearing your blue blazers and button-down blue shirts and you'll be fine. But he's not a Drucker fashion horse, right?
No, but, I do think fashion is important, and I think it should convey beauty, and we seem to have very much rejected that idea.
Well, last night they began to tell me about a runway show that they had just read about, where one of the models was either a very young teen or maybe even prepubescent who had had the double mastectomy and the transgender fluidity issue. And I said, stop. I don't want to hear about this. I don't cover it on the radio. And by the way, parents, if you've got kids in the back of the car, because it's one of those issues that will get people to turn off the radio. And I'm not here to drive listeners away. So I'm not here to talk about often the issues associated with that. But boy, when the Turkish-Syrian earthquake comes in, all that stuff goes out the window, Molly. And it suggests to me what Lincoln said, if you drive natural law out the front door, it will come in the back door immediately.
Yes, that's true. I worry that we have done so much damage to so many people that should disaster strike, say, here in the United States, that we would not have, we would have just messed up so many people and so trained people away from where they should be that it would make it much more difficult to survive or thrive.
This is a clarifying moment, though, for the general rule of law, of nature law, as to biological diversity. And I wonder, do you follow the J.K. Rowling stuff?
I do.
Did you see yesterday the gaming company to which she licensed Harry Potter has introduced a transgender figure? And that this has brought about a great deal of controversy at the same time that the former leader of the Scottish Labour Party is denouncing Nicola Sturgeon for her craziness on gender ideology. Do you think, in other words, we've hit the wall and that this is just now being exiled as a subject of ordinary political conversation?
Oh, this is infuriating. I mean, you had the situation with the Scots where they had massive uprising against the placement of a male in a female prison. And the response by the leaders was to just do it again. And you have J.K. Rowling, who is responsible for this entire universe, who is saying very obvious, clear, correct things about the importance of males and the importance of females and the importance of private space for each and how this is a reality thing. And then the gaming company responds by overtly going after her with the introduction of something. This is a children's series, and the idea that we would intentionally confuse children, tell them things that aren't true, which is so warping and messed up, it's infuriating. And it doesn't seem like they care that this is rejected by the vast majority of people.
Oh, this is not close. This is not a close issue, and yet the media is acting as though it is. This is an issue on which 95 to 99% of Americans have great compassion for people who are dealing with actual gender dysphoria, have great suspicion of the manifestation of gender dysphoria among junior high school girls who are particularly prone to social contagion, and generally are against anything permanent being done physiologically to anyone under the age of 18. But we've run into this wall of massive resistance, and then along comes a natural disaster and biology reasserts itself again, Molly. Do you think biology inevitably will win this?
Okay, so did you see yesterday that Anthony Blinken tweeted out opposition to female mutilation, which happens in certain cultures across the world?
Yes.
He tweets out this opposition to it. Meanwhile, his own administration is pushing it on children, permanent sterilization, this horrible mutilation. And they don't even understand how they seem like such evil bad guys to be promoting this. It's always something that I think we should.
Nothing is consistent,
particularly with children.
There is no consistent policy on the left. There is a consistent truce among groups that I self-identify as progressive, not to be critical of each other's agenda. That's what, I don't think you're going to find Antifa out there marching for transgendered surgeries at the age of 12, but you're also never going to see Antifa criticizing it. And so it's sort of a truce on the left. But I do you agree with me, my general sense, that people who listen to this discussed on the radio don't listen for very long?
Yeah, and I think you should, you know, you always have to be careful how you talk about it, too. I'm a mother, so I'm one of the, you know, I'm a radio listener, I'm a mother, and I do, you know, understand that everything that gets mentioned gets discussed. You know, every kid is listening to everything that's happening.
Well, that's why I always give a pre-warning, and I ramp into it so that people can decide to switch a station for one segment or so. So but why do you think...
I think it's important for people to talk with their children about these things because they're getting such a barrage of misinformation from their schools and from the culture. And so if you don't talk about it with your kids, other people will, and you're not going to really like the results. So I think, you know, I just encourage everybody to.
And at what age? I bring this up because the New York Times today discovered a Tripp Gabriel story. Education issues vault to the top of the GOP's presidential race. This came out today. Last week, I wrote the same column for The Washington Post after the RNC winter meeting. But it's actually been that way since the Glenn Youngkin gubernatorial campaign. Do you think the New York Times just noticed this, or they want to notice it early in the election cycle rather than late in an election cycle?
I view it as them warning their political allies to be careful because it is a very important issue for people. It is affecting elections. So they're asking them to just be a little bit more careful about how they push their social agenda.
That's Amen. That's exactly. It's a warning signal. Now, Molly, you are a star of stage and screen. I run into you at green rooms all over the place. Have you ever seen Corey DeAngelis on a Sunday show or any similarly situated high profile legacy news media channel?
No.
And what does that tell you?
I don't know.
It tells me that they do not know who is the voice of the movement. And it's like Chris Rufo and Corey DeAngelis have become the most effective public intellectuals in their spaces in the last 3 years, and mainstream media doesn't know they exist.
Well, that happens, I feel like, with so many people who, you know, there is this overrepresentation of fringe viewpoints that are held by, you know, elites. And then there is this massive underrepresentation of normal viewpoints. It's actually why I like to be in the media, even though I don't, you know, I wouldn't otherwise love living in DC or anything like that. But I think about how many people are not well represented by the pundits, by the people on TV. And it's important to have that representation.
I 100% agree. This is the greatest source of the need for ideological diversity. And normal is a word that triggers people. But just, I say, people in the median position on any issue in the country don't often show up on television unless it's Molly Hemingway. Thank you, Molly. I'll be right back. America State of the Union night. We'll be on live 8:30 on the Salem News Channel with live broadcast coverage of the entire event and the speeches thereafter. Always stay tuned to your app, the Salem News Channel app.
Hey, everybody. It's Dwayne Patterson of the Hugh Hewitt Show. The last time we talked, I was about 3 weeks into a 50-pound weight loss project with my PhD, weightloss.com. I had lost 16 pounds after 3 weeks. Today, I've lost 50 pounds in just 12 weeks and have been able to keep it off for the last 2 months. And you can, too. MyPhDWeightLoss.com has all the information, or 864-644-1900.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I have a new column at the Washington Post this morning, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be well regarded on the left. I'm pretty sure that we're going to hear that I'm a hypocrite because I'm calling for judicial activism. Let me read this to you, and then you decide. The headline, again, the headline is picked for me by the headline editors at the Post. I write the column, they write the headline. Opinion, time for another Supreme Court revolution. The column. During the late 1930s, the Supreme Court issued a series of decisions widely seen by scholars, and later by historians generally, to be a sea change from the judicial philosophy of confining the federal government to the limited powers granted by the Constitution plus subsequent amendments. The Civil War Court had interpreted the sweeping civil rights amendments narrowly to the great detriment of blacks as well as women and Native Americans. The Depression era court slumbered indifferent to the poor and the suffering for almost a decade. The lassitude towards American in need was unsustainable. The Great Depression eroded that indifference on the part of the court. Even inside the court cocoon, justices knew the country was broke and on its back, just as today's jurists drive past homeless residents of the nation's capital, so too the court of the 1930s saw the misery that engulfed the country. So we're not, they're not living in a cloistered ivory tower. They're driving through Washington, D.C. And if you take the tunnel on the 395 every day, you just, you know what's happened in the country. When random mass shootings and skyrocketing fentanyl deaths plague every major city and much of the suburban and rural United States as well, the question is, will today's justices take judicial notice of the calamities and try to assist federal, state, and local governments in their struggles? What is needed now is a move in the opposite direction of that taken by the Depression Court, a direction away from the fast failure of centralized power. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the complete collapse of centralized authority. They can't get anything done. They don't know what to do. They're paralyzed. The country is not anywhere near the economic and social crisis of the 1930s, but the amount of pain among the citizenship is large and growing. Beneath the deeply and almost perfectly divided slabs of red and blue, there is agreement from left to right that the government has failed. The border is not secure. Drug-related deaths are epidemic. Violent crime has been escalating. School children are being indoctrinated but not educated. And, most ominous of all, our principal adversary, the Chinese Communist Party, has so little respect for our defense that it spies with impunity within and above the country as never before. Most observers, many observers, actually, that's what I wrote, many observers, might counsel strongly against a bold move by the Supreme Court back to the Constitution and away from the failed rule of the administrative state. Election results in the past decade have been too close, they reason, to find justification in them for sweeping action. The 1930s court shifted toward federal power in reaction, I should have put in part, to the huge electoral victories by Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal Democrats. In fact, the switch in time that saved nine, a very famous case in Supreme Court lingo, had its roots before the 1936 election, but they could see which way the elections were going. Yet surely these justices in the 30s were looking at more than just the ballot box to see that the court had drifted too far from the center of public opinion. They also must have followed their eyes to see the stresses of the Great Depression demanded a new approach from the court. What reaction is demanded by our current condition? The obvious conclusion is that the federal government especially, and government generally, but the federal government especially, has lost its way in the thicket of progressive excesses and is hopelessly adrift, but expanding nevertheless. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and does less and less and less well. Like the 1930s court, today's justices do not need a particular case or controversy to take notice of the general collapse of credibility among institutions. Formerly trusted figures in public health, education, technology are seen as menacing, reckless, and rampantly politicized. I believe that's absolutely true. Have the courts, one-third of the partners in the federal government, acquiesced in the malignant growth of incompetence? Have they given up? Have they clothed that incompetence in power that they ought to rein in instead? Now, I'm not going to use the fancy terms, but this is basically a call for the explicit and rapid repeal of the Chevron deference standard, elevation of the major case doctrine, amplification of free exercise and free speech rights, crushing of state courts that are doing things to Jack Phillips and other religious objectors. I want the court to pick up the pace. One obvious abdication of judicial responsibility has been the long refusal to protect the rights of private property owners. And this is 100 years old. This goes back to the city of Euclid, a case about zoning that was a 1922 or 23 case. We are everywhere in this country short of houses, buffeted by rising prices and rents. A whole generation of young people despair of owning a home and building the nest egg that traditionally begins with home ownership. This housing shortage and apartment shortage is a creation of the government. You've got to understand that, America. This is a government-created crisis. The justices have been blessing government authority for so long, beginning with a decision called Penn Central, but actually going on forever. For as long as I've been a lawyer, they have sided with permitting authorities against the Fifth Amendment's takings clause, which prohibits the condemnation of private property for public use without just compensation, and does so, by the way, on a temporary basis. If the court, if they take over your land to build a highway for 3 months, they owe you 3 months rent. And I'm very into property rights because I believe they're the absolute foundation of freedom. People have to be able to own property, and the government has become increasingly indifferent to it, and the court has blessed it. I go back to the column. The shortage of the creation of the government and its roots are in the Supreme Court's blessing of and protection of government authority. The justices can indeed shift rapidly, 1930 styles, to favor owners against rampant takings of property rights. This includes typically the cynically named temporary takings exercised by local officials withholding permits by the hundreds of thousands. If you've never been a land use lawyer, you actually have no idea how this goes. My chiropractor has been in the permitting process for 2 years. With a local jurisdiction, 2 years, back and forth with the planning department. See, when the government creates a job, the people who have that job feel obliged to do something, even if it's shuffle paper and call people on the phone and demand plans that they don't need. And when it comes to planning departments across the United States, there's an entire cottage industry of planners. My nephew's a planner. I'm not against planners. They've been told to do A, B, and C. All of it's unconstitutional, but they've been told they do A, B, and C. Last two paragraphs of the column. Where the housing problem gets confused with problems of mental illness and addiction, and people are left to live on the streets, the federal courts can reinforce the authority of governments to clear away homeless encampments and place people in need of treatment into treatment. Where heavy-handed efforts to advance one minority group at the expense of another, Asian Americans, it can be argued, lose out when college factor race into admissions, courts can, once again, crush discrimination. Like they did in 1954 in Brown. The judiciary can look with favor on states deeply injured by the collapse of the border. They can do that. Judges can defend individuals' ownership of personal data against both big tech and big government. They can do that. In short, I conclude, the project begun with the Dobbs decision on abortion last year, returning power to the people and authority to governments closest to the people, must continue. The need for a U-turn away from an ever-growing government is everywhere we look. And the justices of the Supreme Court must not be blind to the signs of the time. The signs of the time, and boy, that is going to make people upset. I'm going to get a lot of negative comments because what that calls for is the judiciary to enforce the Constitution. That's all it is. The judiciary, go back to the original intent of the Constitution, the Privileges and Immunities Clause, the Equal Protection Clause. Go back to the Fifth Amendment prohibition on uncompensated takings. Go back to due process procedural rights. Go back to upholding the police power of the state. Overturn the Boise decision, which has led in many cases to complete paralysis in the face of homeless encampments. Get to work. We are at a 1930s kind of situation domestically in the United States, internationally, where they're vis-a-vis the Chinese Communist Party. But that doesn't need the court. Executive power, when it comes to defending the country, is complete. That's why the president is the commander in chief. That doesn't need any brushing off, although the people at Gitmo are still alive, and that's because of 20 years of incoherence from the Supreme Court. And they have been incoherent. Now there is a six-judge block of serious originalists who understand. They have disagreements, obviously, because originalism is not monolithic, and there are different gradations, and you can weigh. But we get back to first principles. We can easily get back to, you know, we're going to start making you pay for an endangered species classification. If you sequester someone's property, we're going to make you pay. If you have opinions on this, by the way, you can call me at 1-800-520-1234. Jacob will screen the call. But I don't want you folks calling me and saying, I don't know my common law. I know exactly what I'm saying. It is not inconsistent. I am calling for the absolute application of the Fifth Amendment to temporary takings. I'm calling for the resurrection of the police power on the state and local level so they can deal with homeless encampment. I'm calling for the court to direct the executive to protect the border pursuant to laws passed by the legislature. I am calling, in short, to repeal the progressive era of judicial activism, which is 100 years old. Now, the rollback of the state began with a series of Commerce Clause decisions. It took a detour with Obamacare for reasons which I think are completely defensible. But it's time for, you'll see the court today. I don't know if five justices will come or seven or nine. Justice Ginsburg usually was there. The chief is usually there. Clarence Thomas is usually there. Well, we'll see tonight. They'll file in. They're in the front row. They never applaud, by the way. They're not. That's just they don't applaud. If you're a Steelers fan and you're wondering why aren't they applauding, it's because they never applaud. That could be understood to make a comment that would endanger their impartiality. We did get Sam Alito once to say, that's not right. When the President Obama was distorting what the United Citizens United decision say. But even that's a little expressive for the court. They're sphinx-like. But I hope that's why the column came out today. It's in time for the State of the Union. And I know the justices are in town.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.